Welcome in to another edition of Monday Mailbag with Nick Patrick. He is the man, the myth, the legend, the ultimate heel referee, Nick Patrick. I'm your host, Cassio. Nick, how are you, buddy?
Man, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing fantastic. This is an exciting one. We have got our first ever live studio audience,
Nick. Yeah, man, that's cool. That's very cool.
Some of the ad-free shows family are watching us, and hopefully they will interact. Or you can just sit back, relax, and listen to us as we do this show live. We come to you every 2 weeks right here on the Monday Mailbag for ad-free shows. So we appreciate everyone that is consuming this for being a part of the ad-free shows family. We do not take it for granted. Nick, I would say you got to be comfortable. You've done a lot of live television or live to tape, either one.
Yeah, man. I started back when we started doing pay-per-views back in the day. And the early 80s, mid-80s, I guess, is when they started really cranking up with the pay-per-views and live television back all through the wrestling wars. I got where I kind of liked. I got comfortable doing live television. So I kind of preferred it sometimes.
I think anytime I've did something live rather than recorded, I feel like you do better, because if you know it's recorded, you're like, I can just redo it if something goes bad. I think your senses heighten if you're doing it live.
You get a more natural feel, I think.
Yeah. So chime in the chat. We'll see your conversations going over there if you would like to chime in. If not, we are going to roll through. Nick, of course, Deep South Wrestling. You are in charge of that, as you have been for many years, and your family has been for many years. And we talk every time we get together about all the exciting stuff that is going on in Deep South Wrestling. It seems like every 2 weeks when I talk to you, it is growing and growing some more. How was the Braves game? I forgot to ask.
It was awesome. We had a great time in Gwinnett, and they want to do it again next year. And it was really a lot of fun, man. The game went extra innings. The Stripers won. And we had the big battle royal. Jacob Johnson won the battle royal. And it was a great night, man. We had three matches before the game. Then the game happened, and then we had a battle royal at the end. And Mother Nature was good to us. When we got there, they had the tarp all pulled out because it was drizzling. And it stopped, man. And we had the show, and they had their game with extra innings and everything. It was a great time. And if anybody that lives up there or you live close by, if you've never been to a Gwinnett Stripers game at Cool Ray Field, man, you need to go check that out. That is a lot of fun. It's an awesome experience. The people, the staff there, make sure you have an awesome time. And the food is great. The venue is incredible. It's a really cool part of town that they've got set up there, man, with lofts and apartments all around surrounding. And it's a cool, fun family environment. And, if you're ever around and you get a chance, go check out a Stripers game up in Gwinnett, man, because it was a blast.
Tons of fun, and glad to hear that Keith phrase. They had fun and want to do it again. So maybe that's at least an annual thing for Deep South Wrestling out there.
Yeah, it turned out real well, man. We had a couple suites where we could sit and watch the game. And there was even some rocking chairs out there at the levels for the suite people to sit in. But, you know, I was impressed by how good the food was out there. You know, you go out there, man, you're going to eat good. You're going to have a good time. It was awesome. And I'll be really glad to come back and do it again. I couldn't talk Big Nick into going with me, but I'm going to take him next time. I'm going to trick him somehow. Because Nick is funny. He'll say, yeah, I'll do it. And then about a week beforehand, he'll say, I don't want to do it. Yeah, I don't want to force him to do anything, you know, to be fun. But it's funny, the times that I've had no choice but to take him because I couldn't, you know, I had nobody else to watch him. He gets there and has a blast every time, man. So, the last time I took him, he actually climbed into a ring And it's the first time I told you that story a while back. Yeah. It's the first time he'd ever done that, man. All through growing up, his brother would jump right in, you know. But little Nick was like, he loved to watch it on TV and everything. But when it come to coming down and checking us out at Deep South, we couldn't put him in the ring. He's like, somebody might come. I guess he thought somebody's going to come get him, you know. But, man, he climbed right in there. It's just been a while now. But
we get him out to a game, right?
No,
get him out
to the field. Yeah, he'll have a blast, man, especially sitting up there in the suite and then sitting there, being able to sit down and watch stuff and go right out and grab some food and come back and sit down. You know, it was a really great experience, man.
What'd you eat? You said you had good food. What'd you eat? Hot dogs? Ballpark
dogs? I didn't eat hot dogs. They had some catfish nuggets there. And some fries. Yeah, I had some of them, man. It was bad. Oh, it's cashless there, so you know, bring your card when you come. I was like, I was going to get something. I'd pull that cash. I'm work out. And I was like, I didn't even have my credit card with me. So Eric had, my buddy had to come help me out. I was okay. So it was cool, man. I had a great time.
Your tartar sauce with the catfish, right?
I don't know, man. I'm not a tartar sauce guy. I'm lactose intolerant. I like the taste of it, but it just kills me, man. I'll just if I do a tartar sauce, I have to take some of those lactate pills, and I can't.
Oh man, that means
they can't be heavy on there. Oh, they kill me, man. But I usually just when I do fish, I usually use just regular cocktail sauce, the shrimp sauce.
Okay,
I like that, man. That's usually my go-to when I do fish or fried fish.
Man, I love catfish nuggets, man. I hadn't had them.
Yeah, they were thumping, man.
All right, so get your chats in. We're going to get also, you've got some another slate of great shows.
Yeah, we got we got two more coming up this month. We had actually three shows this month. The one we just had at Gwinnett, and on May 19th, we're coming back to Dos Barbecue with another big show. I give you the rundown for that show.
Yeah.
Our opening match is supposed to be Spiral. Finally, we got him. You know, we had a mix-up on dates and stuff, and we had to change.
You did. You missed him last time.
Yeah, but we got him, and he's going to be opening up against Nauseousism. So that's going to be a monster match. It's going to be awesome. A great way to kick the show off. And we're going to have Jim and Jewel there against Island Girl Tracy Taylor. We got Chad Skywalker taking on The Wall, who's the young man that just came back from Germany not too long ago. And he's back on the scene making an impact. We've got Nathan Vanderbilt and Principalo taking on Smoke and Cosmo Martinez. That's going to be an awesome tag team match. And then Skrilla the Great has had a falling out with a guy helping me run my company, Eric Adams. And he clocked him from behind, and they've got a big match, and it's going to go down coming up at Doss at Doss on the 19th, man. So that's awesome. And then we got another show after this. It's going to be our first time out to this place, and I'm really looking forward to coming out here. It is New Realm Brewery, and you can come pull the address up there, but it's right on the Beltway, and it's really cool. We got a great card for that. We're going to start off with Cosmo Martinez against Takuri. We got Nauseousism taking on Nathan Vanderbilt. We got Professor Payne taking on Luca Daniels. We got Papa Marco there, going to be taking on Randy Rose, and not the old school Randy Rose. When I saw that name, I thought, Randy Rose. I called my guy, said, man, is this a misprint or what? You know, Randy's an old friend of mine that, you know, from back in, he was one of the original Deep South champions back way back in the day. So there's another Randy Rose that's going to be coming and making a little run here, but he's going to be taking on Papa Marco, so he's going to have his hands full. And then we got a tag team match with Skrilla the Great and Big Lamar Diggs taking on Jacob Johnson and Chad Skywalker. So that's going to be, a monster card. Both of those cards are monster cards. Great matchups, and it's going to be awesome at both places, man. Oh, at DOS, it's always off the hook. We've got a great following there, but this is going to be our first time at New Realm, and I'm really anxious to kick it off with a bang, man. It's going to be a really cool show right there on the Beltway.
So plenty of chances to see Deep South Wrestling coming up. If you are in the Atlanta area, if it's worth the drive, if you're just outside of it, of course, if you're visiting Atlanta, make sure you check out wearedeepsouth.com. You can see their schedule and see if they're going to be having a show when you're in the area. I know a lot of people go in and out of Atlanta. And so if you're over there, be sure to check that out. And you can check out matches and more over on their YouTube as well. So check out wearedeepsouth.com. The tradition, the history. Last episode, if y'all have not seen it, go back, Nick, you surprised us with the belts from back in the day. You found those and the tag belts.
Yeah,
I'm having on the spot. But any decision made yet?
We are. Those tag team titles are going to continue to make history. I'm having them professionally cleaned, and I'm going to, I'm telling you and my fans here, but my DOS show coming up, I am unfortunately not going to be able to make it because my son, Tony, was going to watch my mom and his brother, and he's got called off to work. He got a really cool gig that he's going to go. He's got to go do it. Instead, I've got some friends and I've pulled some strings, and I'm not going to say the name because it's going to be a surprise. Since Eric has got a match with Skrilla the Great, his hands are kind of, going to be kind of full. So I am bringing in a special grand marshal to take my place and to make any special announcements that need to be made, whether it be regarding the tag belts or whatever. And this person will be in charge of helping make sure the show runs smoothly.
Okay.
And so it's a surprise for folks now.
Gotta be a surprise that night.
Yeah, I pulled out some really cool surprises so far, and I guarantee you, you're gonna like this one too.
I like it. All right, that's gonna be fun to find out who that is. You ready for some questions, Nick?
Yeah, anytime, man.
Let's start with a live question. Isaac Riston's over in the chat. Isaac, good to see you, buddy. He said, Nick, not sure if you saw backlash from Lyon, France, but what are your thoughts on the live crowd? If you've seen any clips, is there a crowd you can recall that was on fire for a show that was that on fire? And what was the deadest crowd you was ever worked in front of?
Oh, it's hard to say the deadest because, when you start off – and done it as many years as I've had, you've worked everything from the Royal Albert Hall to the little pool room down at the bowling alley, So there's been some really, little shows. There's been some indie shows that were just
but is there any big venues that were surprisingly quiet?
That were surprisingly quiet, no. But all
you got there,
not really there were certain venues that was harder to get because, like when WCW first started going up into WWE's territory, and when WWE started coming in to WCW territory way back in the day, when Vince, from the Black Saturday days, and Vince come in and started trying to run Georgia, and people wasn't used to that, he did not do well. Houses weren't doing well. The ratings on his TV wasn't doing well. That was one of the few things that was not a success for Mr. McMahon. And he had to take it and regroup and learn from it and go a different route, But that's, if you watch the Black Saturday Dark Side of the Ring episode that I just did, it'll explain a whole lot of that, all the things that went down.
We're going to get into that in just a second.
Yeah, okay, yeah, because I'm the only person that I can think of, and I may be mistaken, but and nobody else has spoke up because I made the claim, but I'm the only person that was at Black Saturday and the takeover in Panama City that I
can think of. How about
that? Yeah, and they were similar. The end result was very similar. It was different the way it was handled because it was different times and different businesses, but their approach and what they said to the message that was delivered and the outcome was basically the same.
So you were there for those. Did you get a chance to see the backlash from France?
I just seen little pieces of it. I saw Jey Uso come out, man. Those people up in that top balcony was bouncing so hard. It looks like the balcony might come down. It was, they were rocking, man. But that's the way a lot of those European venues are. Especially ones that they don't run all the time, and I haven't heard of them going to that town in France, so it was fresh and new and hot, and man, they are off the hook. That's one of those crowds, I've explained it before, that sometimes when you're in the ring, everybody's facing you. And when everybody's popping, the sound is all traveling toward you. And it's kind of like being in a drag race. You can feel the vibration. You can feel the sound. And it's, man, it gives you chill bumps when you're able to feel the sound, man. And they were feeling it that night. I guarantee you that Uso young man, he had to have goosebumps all up his arms, man, because it was just sheer power and electricity that you're generating, man. And people are digging off what you're doing, and it's an incredible feeling.
That's got to be the feeling you're chasing after that. It's kind of like I hate to liken it to drugs, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you get that feeling and you go, boy, I've never felt that hot of a crowd. Now all I want to do is feel that hot of a crowd. You judge them against that one from then on out.
Yeah. It's very addictive. It's awesome, man. It's an incredible feeling.
Well, you brought it up, so I was going to discuss it. I wanted to make sure we got Isaac in first since he hit us first up in the live chat. But you made an appearance. Everybody was texting me and blowing me up. Nick Patrick, Dark Side of the Ring, and you were all over it, brother. So, first of all, let's go back to when they reached out to you and how this all came about.
I think Gerald Briscoe or somebody threw my name out there, so they contacted me. And what they do is they contact you and they'll ask you a bunch of questions and what you know about different stuff and ask you a different, you know, and if you got any stories. And you know me, I got stories, man. So I just kind of sat and talked to them, you know, and they liked and then negotiated a price to do an interview with me. And it was about a year ago, I think I did it. You know, it was at the beginning of the last season. They were filming for the next season already. You know, they were showing earlier, and, you know, they still the season before where they were still, you know, cranking stuff out. So it's been about a year. And I went and then met them down at some studios in Atlanta. And it was cool. They were very cool, very professional. It was fun. You know, I had a good time. You know, you know me, I love talking about wrestling.
Yeah.
They had a bunch of questions. The only thing that struck me as funny is that they wanted me to play off like I was a hard ass or a badass. I'm like, that's not my gimmick. You know, I was a chicken shit. That was my gimmick. You know, but so when I did it, man, you'll see me in a couple of poses. Like I got indigestion or some shit. You know?
Like you had tartar sauce. You were getting
like I found tartar sauce on my sandwich.
So all around great experience from your
awesome.
Side.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'm actually talking to, they've actually just contacted me again about a couple other episodes that they're thinking about doing that I was part of, you know, those things that happened. So dude, you may see me on there again here pretty soon. I just talked to him yesterday, actually.
Any of the questions surprise you or ambush you or come out, or did you think when it came out, have you got a chance to see it? Did you see it?
Yeah, I got set and watched it. They let me know it was coming out.
I thought the finished product was good.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. And you know, it was accurate. You know, everything I said and you know, they didn't take anything out of context. Everything. I enjoyed doing it. That was a great experience. That's why I'm going to, you know, if they like all my stories about what's coming up again, you'll see me on there again here.
Those are great guys and a great production. Anytime I've ever seen them do anything, it's always been great. And then, like you said, they roll out the red carpet for you, take care of you. Nice guys. So that's awesome to hear that you had a great experience and that people are checking it out. If you have not seen it, go back and check it out. It's got our man Nick Patrick all over it. And hopefully, like you said, we'll see you in a couple more next season as well. This was your only one this season?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be looking for that. Let's get to some more questions from the listeners. Tony Flowers said, "What's up, guys?
How's it going, Tony?
Before the days of IFBs, if something needed to be changed in the middle of the match, how would that be communicated to you? In WWF, it was someone at ringside, like the timekeeper. What was it in WCW, and how would they get the message to you without interfering in the flow of the match?" Thank you, Tony.
At that point in time, they didn't have the technology to redo a whole match. You know, they couldn't come out and just change something on the fly. So really the only kind of cues you got back in the day before IFBs was time cues. You know, you'd know if you had a commercial break, they'd let you know when it was coming. You'd get time cues, you know, and that's mainly all we got was time cues back in the day before IFBs. So guys were, you know, they didn't have that crutch, you know, if they forgot what's going on, somebody in their ear to put them right back on track. You know, that's, you know, and it's very helpful. You know, that, like you said, if something needs to change, you can do it that way. But before the IFBs, there was no way to, if you wanted to change what was happening in the ring, then the guys in the ring better already have a plan B. And then you have some kind of a cue they give you that was similar to a time cue. And, you know, then, but that would be the only way to do it. And to be honest with you, I never did that. I never had. There was matches that had a plan B back in the day, but they were house show matches. You know, they were never a TV match.
Yeah. So if you never remember one stood out where it was a big change in what you thought the finish was going to be, or hey, major change.
No, there was one time up in Philadelphia. There was Freebirds working with somebody. Who was going to see who was going. They were going to take more at the heel of the baby faces. But I can't even remember who it was. And they had a plan B, but the Freebirds ended up. You know, they were workers, man. They got their heat. So, but as far as you know, anything changing, there was a couple of times that it was done as a rib on a young green, like a baby face or a heel, where they would think that they were, you know, putting the other guy over and right. do a high spot where the guy would just hold on to him and not kick out. And you'd make that three count, and all of a sudden they'd look up and they won, and they're not supposed to win. And they're like, oh shit, you know, I'm in trouble. You know, that, we did that a couple of times, on house shows, you know, for a rib. But with IFBs, it changed everything. You could do a whole lot more, you know, but back in the days we didn't have that. Really, it was only time cues that we were receiving from somebody at ringside or somebody coming up the aisle or whatever.
Was there any negatives for going to the IFB that you know
just,
of?
Just getting used to it at first until you get one that's used, that's custom fit for you, that fits in there, that they're comfortable. But they got different sizes and shapes, and it's like sticking a friggin' pacifier in your ear. With some of them old school ones, you know. And when you're working and moving and jumping up and down and sliding, all of a sudden you start sweating. Boop! That thing would shoot out of your friggin' ear, you know. And you'd be stuck up in your ear, you know. But now that they've got the custom mold ones, that those don't bother you at all. Only over time, yeah. And you have to keep the volume down because over time, people talking and you're hearing different people talking, people said, and the excitement, and you hear the crowd and you turn it up so you can hear them too, and it can mess with your hearing, you know. Yeah. Years, you know, but that would be the only negative, you know, as far as it gives you an advantage in every other aspect.
Adam Krasnoff wants to know, Nick, you are most known for your time in WCW as a heel referee, but I'm curious if you ever had the chance to meet wrestling's original referee, Dangerous Danny Davis.
No, I never met Danny. I heard a lot about him, and I watched him do his gimmick back in the day. But I never had a chance to meet him. He didn't come around any when I was up there. You know, a lot of times different guys or old-timers would show up when you come to their town. And then sometimes they don't, and I understand that, too, after being up there, you know.
Yeah.
But I never did. I never met him. He seemed like, I heard he was a great guy. I don't know, and he had a good little run working in the ring too, which is, I'm sure, ultimately what he wanted to do in the first place. And it gave him a chance to start off and have a little storyline and get some heat, you know. So good for him, man. People still remember him and talk about him.
That's great. He also says, during your time in Louisiana, did you ever stop by any drive-through daiquiri spots? And if so,
what's right.
your flavored daiquiri?
Oh, man, I like the strawberry ones and the peach ones. Peach and strawberry were my two favorite. And, yes, I did right there because I lived in Pineville, Louisiana, when I was there because it was kind of in the middle of – because it was a five-state promotion. And you drove your butt off, man. So I lived in a little Alexandria. Well, Pineville was a suburb of Alexandria. So we stayed there. A lot of – there was a handful of guys that stayed out there. So that's where I stayed, too. But they had one over in Alex. You cross over the bridge. And as soon as you crossed over the bridge, crossed from the Holiday Inn was the Daiquiri Hut, man. I saw that. I was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, damn, they're wide open here in Louisiana. They're selling daiquiris. You just drive through and get one.
Amazing.
Man. Yeah.
So, amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
What flavor did you say?
I like strawberry and peach.
Adam said, I asked Hacksaw Jim Duggan the same question once, and he emphatically said strawberry.
Yeah.
He said, Louisiana law permits the sale of alcohol beverage from a drive-thru in a styrofoam cup as long as customers wait until they arrive at their destination before consuming them. He said, I'm sure most of the guys back in Mid-South abided by this, right, Nick?
Of course we did. Honest engine.
Honest, I didn't see your signal. You're off camera there. I like how that move. That was a heel move right off camera.
Honest engine, man.
No, you threw it up.
I will not have this cocktail until I get home.
No, lid.
Especially back then. Strong. there was empty cups getting thrown out the window. that's blowing down the highway.
Let's get to a question by Isaac over in the live chat. He said, wrestling is a physically demanding sport and injuries are a part of the business. Can you recount any specific moments where you had to make critical decisions in the ring due to an injury?
Yeah, several times. One for myself when I blew my knee out, but the one I remember most was that crazy ladder match they had where Joey Mercury got his nose broken.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. I mean, it cut in half like broken, you know. Oh. And he was supposed to do some more stuff. They did this thing where they made like a teeter-totter out of the ladders. And he was supposed to be going like to grab one and somebody jump on the other end and it come up and hit him in the face, you know. And if something went drastically wrong timing-wise and he didn't get his hands up or whatever – and that ladder come up and bam, right in the nose and just broke up. Man, it was gruesome. It was the most gruesome nose break I'd ever seen in my life. And I said, and I knew he had more stuff to do in the match, but it wasn't happening. So I just come up to him and I grabbed him. I said, now look, Joey, you're going to be okay, but we're going to leave right now and we're going to the trainer right now. He says, no, I got to do it. I said, no, you're not doing any more in this match. I said, your nose is broke. And it's bad, but you're going to be okay. I kept telling him you're going to be okay. But man, it was bad. And when he saw it, he'd have probably just, boom, you know.
Right.
So I got him back to the trainer, and they started taking care of him. But I got him the hell out of there. And, you know, they had to readjust some stuff that was in there. I couldn't tell you what pay-per-view it was on, but it was in WWE, and it was a ladder match that Joey Mercury was in when he was teaming up with Johnny Nitro, and they had Melina as a manager. So they were involved in a ladder match with somebody, and I think the Hardys might have been in it. I'm not sure. But it's the one where Joey broke his nose, and man, that was bad. I knew right then on the fly, you're out of here, dude. They're going to have to regroup in there. And they did. They were all professional enough to regroup.
I know you. That goes back to you saying you better have a plan B for every match.
I always did, especially if a guy had a high risk maneuver that he wanted to try, that had a chance of going south. Have a plan B in case that does go south, you know?
Yeah.
And so you can just keep it, so you can keep it going smooth. Because nobody knows that you messed up unless you panic and show them that you messed up. You know? Yeah. They didn't sit there and listen to your match. They don't know what the hell you're doing next. They're not in on the finish. You know, right. So, you know, unless you act a fool and scare, you know, and panic, then, you know, if you just keep going and get back on track, then, and that happens more than people realize.
Did you ever, I know you got injured. We've talked about when you got injured as a wrestler and blew your knee out and you knew you were going home there. Did you ever get hurt in ring, maybe by just freak accident as a ref?
As a ref, yeah, the first knee surgery I ever had, I got hurt. Well, I got hurt on the way to the ring and it got hurt worse. I got, on the way to the ring, I got jumped by this kid. He jumped out and we did this before rails and stuff, safety rails.
It was a fan?
Yeah. And he had two brothers with him. Yeah. This fan kid jumps out and he cuts me off and won't let me get to the ring. I said, get the F out of my way. And he said, F you. And he started to make a move. So I spit in his face. And when I spit in his face, he went, and just as he went poo to me, I caught him with a left right in the mush. And then he tried to leg dive me, so I peeled his hair back, and I was punching him in the damn face, and I had all my weight shifted back on my right leg because he was trying to take my left leg. And, you know, he couldn't get it. I wouldn't let him take it. And but I didn't see his brothers coming from behind.
Oh, no.
They shoved me in my back when they did my leg that I had on my weight on my knee hyperextended. And I rolled, and I come to my feet, and I squared off. Now I'm like facing three guys. But luckily for me, the guys that was in the match that was on their way to the ring was the Road Warriors.
Oh.
And they saw me in this fight, and they came over, and Hawk shoved one of them, and he went about four rows up the bleachers and rolled back down. And Animal just walked up and open hand slapped the other one and knocked him out. I knew my knee was hurt because the guy had a cigarette in his mouth that got shoved by Hawk, and he rolled down, and he still had the cigarette in his mouth. And I went to stomp his damn face. And I couldn't even put the cigarette out. I was like, oh, shit, there's my knee feels funny. So I got in the ring, and it was the Road Warriors working with Buzz and Brett Sawyer. And It was about 8 or 9 minutes into the match. I'm circling the ring, and they were doing a spot where they would hit boom, 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 and the ring, the bouncing of the ring, and there's something about the way that ring bounced. My knees went twing, and I went, man, I went face first down. And I ended up having my first knee surgery then after that.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What a statement. I knew my knee was hurt when I couldn't stomp his face.
Yeah, when I couldn't put the cigarette out in his face. Yeah, that's the old days, man.
Oh, that is amazing, man. That is amazing. Let's see who we got next. Oh, we got Greg Jacobson. Says, this should be a fun little afternoon extravaganza. All right. You are correct, sir. Thank you for chiming in, Greg. And he says, Nick, if memory is correct, you were the only referee for NWO sold out and worked every match. How were you able to do that without communicating with the talent in between matches like normal?
They lined up the whole show before the show. I knew everything before I went out there. And I got with each match and told, because I can follow. You know, unless you've got a specific spot that you need me for, I can follow everything else you're doing. As long as I know the finish and what you need me to do for specific spots, I can follow everything else. And that's what I did on that pay-per-view. The hardest time was trying to find times in between where I could shoot out of the ring and go pee real quick and shoot back and be back where they needed me before. You know, that was the that was the hardest part of it. And at the end of the night, I was shot tired too. So, but in the end, I can't think of another referee that's refereed an entire pay-per-view by themselves in modern times. You know, that I can't think of anybody else has done it. So, you know, it's cool to be able to say that I've done that, especially one of that magnitude. That was a very important pay-per-view.
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, and I had to, as while I was working it, because I was a heel ref, and I had to make sure that it didn't turn into the freaking Nick Patrick show every match, you know?
Right.
So I tried to play it straight down the middle for as much as I could until they had a designated spot for me to do something that was heelish, you know. The rest of it was making facial expressions and shit like that, you know, and, you know, during the course of the match. But I tried not to overdo it because, like I said, I was out there for 3-something hours, over how long the pay-per-view lasted. And if I'd have hammed it up in every match, it would have sucked, you know, and been the Nick Patrick show. So
we would have known what was happening. Here we go. Nick's going to do it again.
Yeah. So, you know, it would have been very unaffected by that, especially by the end of the show, that people have been going, oh, my God, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to play it straight as much as possible. But at the end of the day, I think it's very cool that that's something that I can say that I've done that I don't know anybody else has done.
Thank you for that, Greg. Greg was here early. Appreciate you chiming in. Greg Isaac says, what a bleeping story. What a fight. That was a great story. The fans getting in a fight with you. Greg said that was awesome. Thank you, Nick. And, of course, Cassia. Thank you, Greg. We appreciate it. Brother, Isaac wants to know, what's the wildest thing a fan has ever said, thrown, or done at a show? But I guess besides fight you in the aisle, what's some of the wildest things you got hit with?
Oh man, the worst one that hurt me the worst was when we did that Huntington Beach show with WCW. It was live out on Huntington Beach, California, and it was during a commercial break, and somebody took a water bottle and filled it with sand and hunked that thing, and it hit me right between the shoulder blades, and it hit me hard enough to knock me down to one knee. And it partially knocked the breath out of me, but it pissed me off so bad, I jumped up to my feet and spun around ready to fight somebody, and there's thousands of people, and you don't know who did it. And if you start breaking bad, then everybody's going to start throwing shit at you, you know? And I done got hit with a full bottle of sand. I'm like, I don't want that shit to happen again. I was on the lookout from then on, man. The rest, I was watching the match, but I was watching because that would have hit me in my head. It could have killed me. It hit me that hard. It hit me hard enough to knock me to my knees.
Sure.
I mean, it knocked the – man, I was mad too.
How many drinks you ever had pouring on you?
Oh, God, there's no telling. Because I used to just throw them. You know, it was like you'd go back and it looked like you just showered, especially back in the day. There was a couple of times that we had to fight our way back to the locker room, and it's just stuff would be flying from everywhere, you know.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was nuts back in the day, but pre-barricade days, you know. Yeah, that's when they started realizing they had a couple of lawsuits. And said, well, boy, we might want to invest in some safety rails. Yeah,
that's wild to even think
about. It's going to be way cheaper to invest in safety rails and security than it is to keep paying these people that our guys are getting in fights with.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Jesse Huffman, this is a good question. He said, Nick, if you could have one piece of memorabilia from your dad's run, and if offered to go into the WWE Hall of Fame, would you take it? I think that's two different questions, so we'll start one. If you could have one piece of memorabilia from your dad's run, do you have a lot of memorabilia from your dad's career?
Yeah, we've got all pop stuff.
All of it?
Yeah. We got he was inducted in not the WWE Hall of Fame, but the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. That was up in New York. And that's one of most of the guys recognizes, you know, as a real deal, you know. And we've got that. And most of his old masks were used, you know, the masks that we have now are replicas that he had made to sell, you know, anything. And, you know, there's very few originals out there. You know, some collectors have some. But I'm sure mom's got some of his old gear put away somewhere. You know, not too long ago, I found and I posted a picture of me wearing it on Facebook. My mom had made this mask for him. It looked like a black executioner's mask. And I don't know if she made it out of some kind of lingerie or what she made it out of, but it had eye holes and a nose hole, but the mouth was open. And as a kid, Pop would have that mask and we'd go pulling up to a building. He'd look around and see nobody watching. Boop, he'd pop that mask on. That's the mask that he'd wear in and out of the buildings.
Oh.
And she made it like over 50 years ago. I mean, I remember him popping same. Yeah. And I found it the other day and I was like, well, actually several months ago. And it brought back memories of me riding with him as a little boy, you know, and sitting at a stoplight, and somebody looking over and seeing this big dude wearing a freaking executioner's mask, they were like, holy shit.
Little kids sitting in the front seat.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was cool. I remember one time I was riding with Pop and he wore his mask. As soon as we got away from the people, he took it off. But Mr. Wrestling number two, man, he'd wear his all through town and all the way till he was way down the road on the interstate. And if he stopped to go in the store to buy something, he'd wear his mask in the store. And me and Pop was going to get on the road. And Pop looked at me and he said, man, he said, one of these days he's going to go waltzing in there. There's going to be somebody that don't watch wrestling and they're going to shoot his ass.
They're going to think he's robbing the place.
Yeah. I said, Pop, I don't think we're going to find anybody in this town that don't watch wrestling and don't know you guys.
Well, you're there. Yeah. And Jesse wanted to know if you ever got offered – a lot of people have different opinions on the WWE Hall of Fame, but if you were ever offered, would you go in? Would you accept it?
Of course I would. It'd be silly not to. You know, I mean, somebody's paying, honoring you and your career and your body of work, you know. And, you know, I may have disliked some of the folks up there, but, you know, I'm not going to be dumb enough to cut my nose off to spite my face. That's something that would be extremely cool and something that your family could talk and, you know, could be handed down and for generations, you know. So, you know, I don't look for that to ever happen, honestly. And I would not hold my breath, but I wouldn't turn it down either, even if it happened. Yeah, it'd be very cool. It'd be really cool.
Let's see. Adam has one more for us. He said on a previous episode, you spoke about the challenges of having to wear the referee camera during the Chamber of Horrors match. But what were your thoughts on Chamber of Horrors match itself, particularly being in the ring and witnessing the finish with Abdullah the Butcher getting, quote, electrocuted, and then seemingly coming back to life, was what was laid out to you before the match? So, first of all, you were the man in the ring.
Yeah.
Besides the referee part of it, what did you think of watching that match up close?
I thought it was brutal enough, you know, that's for what they wanted. But, you know, the storyline, you know, Abby getting electrocuted – at the end, I was like, well, here we go. We're full-blown showbiz now, you know, because we were still kind of semi-transition period of being legit wrestle and showbiz deal, you know. But, you know, something like that, you have to go showbiz with. And I thought that the props looked cool. And I thought the cool part of the, and I don't think it happened on this show. It might have, but where was one of those shows where they had the big cage rigged up and there was one, there was different props. And one of the props caught on fire when Great Muta was in the ring. And he took that green stuff and blew that green crap on the prop that was on fire and put the damn prop out and got a pop from the people like that almost turned him baby face. They got a pop from the crew too. The crew were like, holy shit, that was cool. We couldn't have planned that and made it more cool.
All right, we got a question from the live chat. Nick, with the launch of WCW Thunder in 1998, how did the addition of a second weekly show impact your schedule and the overall production workflow?
The TV days are long and hard, and it added an extra long, hard day back to back. But overall, in this big scope, the big picture that you look at, you know, it was a necessity. You know, and we grew so strong from those, from having those TVs and having the two different brands, and you know, and it was, it just helped create the war. We, you know, we had two different shows and stories, and so did they, but we also had Saturday Night, and they also had, you know, their own version of whatever they had that was their little, I remember ours being Saturday Night. I don't remember what theirs was, but you know, both companies were just so much alike, and there was such a demand for wrestling at the time, but it made it really hard, because if you think about it, now you're writing two basically pay-per-views a week.
Yeah.
And still having to make this other pay-per-view be more special than what you've seen, you know, that you're trying to make the best thing since sliced bread every week. You know what I mean? So it pressure wise on writing and booking, tremendous by doing that. But you know, they had a team, you know, they had the money to buy a team to pull it off. So it's, and overall, like I said, in the grand scheme of the business, it just, you know, with the ratings and the money that it pulled in, guys were able to ask for the huge bucks that they made back in the day. You know, when Hogan come in and the Nash and them talk about how they revolutionized. I remember there was guys that were upper middle guys that were still making, you know, maybe $250 a year, you know, and that's not counting their gimmick sales, you know. Yeah, I mean, it was crazy, the guys, you know, and then, you know, we became such a pain in the ass to Turner, and because it wasn't owned by Ted anymore. You know, we were dealing with the company. You know, we were it was different, and they didn't put up with shenanigans as much. And they, when they started having lawsuits of this and guys getting hurt and being out for 2 years and milking the pay and then suing the company, and it was like, man, let's get out of this and sell it. You know. It was like the beginning of the end. But, I got rambling on that question. I'm sorry, man.
Hey, no, that's what it's for, man. That's what it's for. We'll get one more from the live chat before we get out of here today. And then I've got somebody I want to bring up and ask you about. We've talked about before, both a mutual friend. Isaac says, Chris Benoit is known for his technical wrestling abilities. What was it like officiating his matches, and how did his style influence your approach as a referee?
I loved working with Chris back in the day. He brought intensity and technical prowess, man. He earned his spot as being a champion, you know, because he earned it. And working his matches were awesome. You know, Chris was like the typical, you ever heard the saying, you know, some smaller guys that say, yeah, well, yeah, but you're small. Yeah, well, mess with me and watch me grow. You know, yeah. That was Chris Benoit. You know, it wouldn't matter if he was in there with somebody three times his size. He had the intensity when he opened up. He was like, you believe he was whooping this big guy's ass, because he was. yeah, he brought intensity, man. But he was so fun to work with, man. And when I got to work with him, too, he valued my knowledge in the years that I've been, you know, because I, you know, was an agent and stuff, too. I would help, and they would ask me, you know, hey, look, what's your opinion? What would you do here? You know, so I got to help guys different times, you know, while they were coming up with their finishes, you know, throw my opinion. Not so much take over the agent's job, but, hey, well, what about this spot or this spot? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. Or I've even had a couple of agents say, Nick, what the hell? What do you think? You know, and I'm like, well, this is wide open here. And then we hadn't touched on that, or, you know, something, you know, because sometimes a fresh set of eyes that's sitting and looking from the different perspective than the guys that are sitting here huddled up gives you a little something different, you know.
I feel like me, if I was in there, I feel like if you know you're going out and it's Chris Benoit and Malenko, or Chris Benoit and Jericho, or Guerrero.
And Eddie, yeah. Him and Eddie.
You know, there's going to be – I feel like for you, there's a lot more you've got to pay attention to as a ref. There's going to be more holds. There's going to be, more – maybe dirty stuff behind your back.
Oh, you got to work. You got
to
work.
Yeah, I feel like they would, you know, man, I'm about to work.
But it's fun, you know. Yeah. That's what you came there for, to be having the chance to be in a match that might be looked at as a 5-star match because you got the guys that can pull it off. You know, that's,
and that translates to the fans. They know.
Yes, and you just you feed off of their energy, and you feed off the energy of the crowd. It's not like, and it's not like work, even though it's work. It's fun. It's truly the job that, you know, I told this to John Laurinaitis one time. I was standing there about to go out in the ring, and I was dead bone tired. We'd just come off of a long ass, like 19 days on the road overseas and back. Had to do a TV before we got home. And I looked at him in the crowd, and we were just dead. And the crowd was just roaring. And I looked at him before I went out, and I said, you know, what we do out there, there's nothing like it in the world, job-wise. I said, it's unparalleled. I said, it's all this bullshit that we have to go through to get to going out there that sucks ass. And then I turned and I walked out the door and I went on out of the ring.
Let's see what we got here. Before we get out of here, it is when this episode drops, Monday Mailbag with Nick Patrick. It is Monday, May the 20th. And buddy, it is our friend Road Dogg's birthday on May the 20th.
All right, man. I'll have to call him and tell him happy birthday.
How many times have y'all spent together, let's just say, partying on a birthday?
Birthdays are hard. You know, we've spent a couple of years. We only spent a couple of years actually working together, so it would only be really a couple. Or we was off in opposite territories working. Yeah,
different directions.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, you know how that goes with your friends. Yeah. And different things that you do. But we spent a couple together. And when you're working, half the time you're not home to celebrate your birthday. You're on the road. I've had birthdays on the road, almost every one of them, you know, very seldom. Until I was hurt. My coolest birthday on the road, we were in Italy. And this is another Benoit story because he was one of my friends. But we had a really good catering at this one town. I can't even remember the town. It was a little smaller Italian town. It wasn't Rome. It was one of the smaller ones, but it was just packed. And the catering was awesome. And Chavo and Chris went to the caterer and had them make a special birthday cake for me. It was like, man, it was unbelievable. It wasn't huge, but it was really tremendous flavor. It was raspberries and just all kinds of, it was unbelievable. I saw the cake. So I'm sitting there and then comes, the door pops open and then comes Benoit and then comes Chavo. And they sing happy birthday to me, and they set the cake down. I was like, holy crap, guys, that is cool. Everybody had a little piece. I said, everybody get some. You know, I ain't taking this to the room with me. We're all going to eat it, you know.
That's awesome. And,
man, oh, man, it was good, too. You know, I had two pieces.
Two pieces.
Damn right I did.
I'll ask this because Greg brought it up as well. We used to ask Road Dogg if he was a better sports entertainer than certain people, and he ruffled some feathers when he said he was a better sports entertainer than Bret Hart, not a better wrestler, but a better sports entertainer. So, Nick, I'm going to let you support Road Dogg on his birthday. Tell everybody he's a better sports entertainer than Bret Hart, says Greg.
Most definitely. Not a better technical wrestler, but way better entertainer. And not nearly the whiner, you know. He's not sitting there bitching about something on the internet every week. He's living life and being happy and enjoying the tremendous career that he had. You know? So,
well, if happy he birthday, dog.
if your feathers get ruffled with the truth, then there's something wrong with you.
See, Greg, you done started it again, Greg. This is how it goes.
Yeah. I got two words for him.
Yes. There we go. Happy birthday, dog.
Yes, that's it.
And suck it. Nick, one more time. Tell them real quickly the dates coming up. Deep South Wrestling, before we get out of here, has incredible two more shows in the month of May, depending on when you are listening or watching this. Just coming off a great event out at the Stripers baseball game, and now two more events still in the month of May, including a brand new venue.
Sunday, May 19th, we're going to be back to Das Barbecue again with a huge show. Big main event. Skrilla the Great's going to be taking on one of the guys I've got running the company for me. They had a falling out. They're going to settle. They're going to settle the issue right there at Das. And then our next show is going to be awesome, man. That's going to be the one that it is the 25th, I believe. Is that what it – in that New Realm Brewery, right
New
on.
New Realm Brewery.
Yeah, New Realm Brewery, right on. And another match that is on here that I have not announced yet, but I'm going to announce it right now.
Whoa!
Matt Sells is going to be taking on D-Money in a boozing and brawling match.
Boozing and brawling?
Boozing and brawling match at the New Realm Brewery, right on the Beltway. So there's two rules to a boozing and brawling match. You got to drink and you got to fight. And that's basically the only two rules that there are. And if you're going to come enjoy it, man, it's going to be fun. It's off the hook. And look up. We have had a couple of boozing and brawling matches. So you can find them in our Deep South website. So check it out. See what it's about, because we will have boozing and brawling happening on the Beltway.
Oh my gosh. A boozing and bar brawling sounds like what I should, if I'm ever going to do a wrestling match, it should be boozing and brawling.
You'll have to come, because I think we're the only company that's doing boozing and brawling right now, man. And we've had a couple of them, and they have been, I wasn't sure how they was going to turn out. You know, I thought, man, the people get with it, and it's fun. It's entertaining. It's fun and they got to beat the crap out of each other. So it's really cool.
And drinking beer. I'm in, man.
Drinking and fighting. That's our two rules for that match. So have at it, guys.
And so that's going to be a brand new location. New Realm Brewing in Atlanta, Das Barbecue on May 19th, that New Realm show on May 25th. And then, of course, you're going to be going back and forth 1 ounce June here coming up. Next show, you'll have some more details about what you got coming up. Couple things. Isaac Riston said, happy birthday, Road Dog. H to the Bizzle, a low-key hizzle. Jesse James with the Truvo Sizzles. How about that?
Oh, man. For shizzle.
Coach Rosie got in here and said, Mr. Patrick, what do you think of Otis Nixon, since you're a Braves fan?
I love Leo Franco. Yeah, I loved Otis back in the day. I hated when he had
trouble. And he was a baller, man.
But I'm glad that everything is going well for him right now. And I'm glad everything, you know, everybody sometimes has struggles in life, and I know he did, but I'm glad that he's doing well.
Man, when he got on the field, you knew there was going to be speed. That's all you knew right there, man.
Yeah, he was one of the first guys that could just flat out go. You know, we got a whole team full of them now. But back in the day, there was, you know, those fast guys really stood out, and he was one of them that did.
Over 600 career stolen bases for Otis Nixon. So
he was bad, man.
And then Julio Franco, who played his entire career, he's like 45 from the time he debuted. And remember that he had some birth certificate issues. They didn't know how old he was for a while.
They didn't want to keep it that way.
Yeah, they were just like, hey. Coach, he wanted to know about the dark side. Coach, we knocked that out at the beginning, so be sure you check that out when this releases. Nick had a fantastic time on Dark Side of the Ring and announced.
It was very, very professionally done, and they're great people.
Yep, and you announced that you might be involved in next season, so we'll be waiting on the official word for that. And next time we're here, we'll announce some June dates. We'll get some updates from everybody else. We'll get some questions from y'all, and we will be live again Nick, how do you feel, man? We had a live studio audience this time.
Hey, I love it, man. I love doing live stuff. It's cool. And it's cool to be able to answer live questions as well. I have interaction. But I'm digging it, man. Let's keep rolling with it.
Let's keep rolling. The questions spawn new questions and new thoughts. And so we're going to have some fun. Thanks, everybody who joined us live today. Greg Jacobson, Coach Rosie, Isaac Riston, just to name a few. Trying to make sure I got a few more. Heather Whitley was in here. So people popping in and out. Sorry if I missed a few more people. But we are desperately out of time, as they say. But Nick, thanks for your time, brother. Always good. Great stories again, as you always do, my friend. It's always good to catch up with you. And we always good to interact with our ad-free shows family. We'll see you back here again in 2 weeks for the Monday Mailbag with Mr. Nick Patrick.